Okay, our next presentation is Mark Pankin talking about Bobby Bregan in Pittsburgh. Was he a sabermetrician ahead of his time?
Thanks on that. Today, it's not unusual to see the best home run hitters hitting, you know, at the top of the lineup. We have Judge hitting second, Trout hitting second. Recently, the Nationals have even batted Bryce Harper's first the last two games in May, and then some of the time he's been batting second. Also, it's no longer surprising to see the pitcher not hitting ninth. However, in the 1950s, those ideas would probably be considered almost out of sync, we'll say, except for a few exceptions like Don Newcomb, who was a great hitter, and once in a while he didn't bat ninth. However, in August of 56, Bregan, who had lots of interesting ideas, decided to try an experiment and do what was now considered a modern thing. So maybe he had an inner sabermetrician he was channeling. Bregan was at our Saber 24 in 1994. That was held in Arlington, Texas. After he was done managing, he moved to the Fort Worth area. And he was still quite feisty then. I think he's singing Happy Birthday there. He was on the piano a bit. Last year, just after Saber, we lost David Vincent, and you're probably all aware of the incredible contributions he made to Saber and Retrosheet. He was also a very avid and talented photographer, so I'm happy he, a long time ago, provided me this photo. So Bregan decided to try an experiment. In August of 1956, he led off with his two best power hitters, Frank Thomas and Dale Long. I had a chance to chat briefly with Frank Thomas a few minutes ago because he was on the Branch Rickey panel substituting for Dick Grote. He batted his pitcher number 7. And the reason he did it, as reported in a Sporting News article, is he wanted to get more at-bats for the power hitters, to get more home runs out of them. And just like today's thinking, he figured after the first inning, he wanted a better chance of some men on base when they'd come up. So more likely to hit then. And he believed that in the ninth inning, there was a good chance that the first and second hitters might come up. Alan Roth had actually given him some data with him. Bregan had come up through the Dodgers organization and managed in the minor leagues in the Dodgers organization. So he knew Alan Roth. Okay, the Pirates, had been pretty bad. I think we heard some talk about that. They had finished in last place the previous four seasons, and he got them off to a very fast start. In mid-June, they were actually a half a game into first place, but then reality set in. By August, they were in sixth place, and he decided it was time to try something different, an idea he had had for quite a while. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to use the Markov model. Don't worry, I'm not going to tell you anything about it. You've probably heard more than enough, and it's on my website if you want excruciating levels of detail. But it will allow me to compute the expected runs per game for a normal batting order, and I'll explain in a minute why that normal's in quote, Bregan's lineups and what the best lineups will. And the model can also tell us who's likely to bat in the ninth inning, at least for leading off. And Retrosheet, of course, given my biases, is going to be a major source of the data. So we'll first look at the Pirates' normal lineup. I say normal because Bregan was always shuffling his lineup around. So these are based on the batters who batted nearly the most in each spot. So Frank Thomas, for example, batted fourth more than fifth, but he batted fifth more than anyone else. So this is a reasonable lineup. It may not have actually ever been used. If we look at this lineup, we see some interesting things. It was Mazeroski's rookie season. He obviously hadn't turned into a great hitter yet. Clemente came up the year before, and he didn't hit that great, but in 56, his talents started to become evident, and he often batted higher than sixth, as shown there. Verdun came over to trade with the Cardinals fairly early in the season. The data there are Verdun's statistics with the Pirates. I'm a Tiger fan, unfortunately. It's on my mind. And the Pirates are the Tigers' now traditional rivals. So if we look at it, not a whole lot of power on this team. Long and Thomas were pretty good home run hitters, especially given the park they were playing in. And they weren't a very fast team because we see they hardly ever tried to steal. The Markoff model for this lineup is 4.2 runs a game. That's somewhat higher than what they actually scored for several reasons. The model may not be perfect, and the actual scoring has all the players hit who are generally not as good as these players. But the important thing is that the Pirates were not scoring well. They were half a run a game less than the league. And the reason is, although their batting average was almost the same as the league, they didn't get on base as much, so they didn't walk as much, and they didn't have as much power. Their slugging average was lower. Okay, so let's look at some of the alternative lineups. On August 18th, that was the first day Bregan started his experiment, he led off with Thomas and Long. And that was the only game in which those two were both the first two, but in a lot of the other games, one of them was either in the first or second spot. You can see he batted the pitcher seventh, and that lineup by the model would score about a tenth of a run a game more than a typical lineup. That's 15 runs a year. The rule of thumb is about 10 runs a year get you an extra win, so that'd be 1 to 2 runs more. More typically with his experimental lineups, he led off with Thomas, but Long batted fourth. Pitcher still batting seventh, and that one was slightly less, but still 12 runs a year better than the typical lineups. Of course, one thing I could do with the Markoff model, and there are a couple of other fellows who are universities, is try and figure out the best lineup given the data we have. Interestingly, both of those guys find that the best lineup comes with the pitcher batting number seven. And we see that would be about 20 runs a year more than the typical lineup. I've done a fair amount of analysis about where the pitcher should bat, and the real story is it doesn't matter if it's seventh, eighth, or ninth. It's not going to have a big effect on the scoring. So I forced the pitcher to bat ninth and saw what would happen. It would be half a run a season less than the optimal lineup. So where you bat the pitcher is not really based on a sabermetric analysis. It's what the manager thinks and other factors taken into account. If we look at the probabilities for leading off, I highlight in red the three in a row that would be the most. So these are the most likely ones to lead off in the ninth. And the real story here is there are not big differences. It's almost random. So there's a good chance with any of these lineups, the number one and number two hitters will come up in the ninth inning, but it's far from a sure thing. Okay, so the next question is, how well did it work? Well, Bregan used it for 15 of the next 20 games, through Labor Day, which wasn't 20 days later. They play a lot of doubleheaders then. Front load, defining front load is Long or Thomas hitting first or second. They won 8, lost 7, which was a lot better than their season's record, but that's not the whole story because there are still some guys on the mound, and I don't think, unless they feel batting seventh, it's going to make them pitch better. We really have to look at the run scoring. And we saw that they scored a lot more in those games. It's a small sample than the other games in 1956. Interestingly, he had 5 games with the pitcher batting seventh in that period, which he didn't have Long or Thomas first or second. And they only scored 6 runs in those 5 games. Small sample, so hard to tell if that's meaningful, but my suspicion is where the pitcher batted then didn't matter that much. After Labor Day, he always batted the pitcher ninth, and only 3 more times did he use the front-loaded lineups. They lost all 3 games. They scored 12 runs in the 3 games, so 4 runs a game, so about typical. Hard to say what difference it made. Okay, I talked with Bregan a bit in 94 at Sabre about this. About 10 years ago, I did a presentation on this at the local Washington area Sabre, found Bregan, who loves to talk about these things, sent him the presentation I did, and we talked a couple times. He was very happy to see that there was a benefit from banning the best hitters at the time. So I asked him some questions, why mid-August, and mainly because the team had fallen down. He wanted to shake things up, and he felt it was the right time. Players basically said except for Grote, and apparently he did not get along with Grote on it. When I talked to Frank Thomas earlier, I tried to find out what the players thought, and he didn't talk about it. About the only thing he said was he didn't care where he batted, which makes sense. Okay, and Bregan managed the Braves for 3.5 seasons in the 1960s. He thought, well, maybe I did that with Frank, with Hank Aaron. So remember, we're talking about already, let's see, from the 60s to the 2040, you know, 40 years later, so his memory might not have been clear. Well, I could check it. He only did that once. So the question is, why did he stop doing it if it was working well? He said he got severe criticism in the press. I could not find anything. It could be they were passing on things they were getting from Pirates management, who he always had a contentious relationship with. But in printed things, one of the writers actually said he considered him the smartest manager in baseball. And if the Dodgers won the pennant, he was going to vote for him for manager of the year. So obviously he wasn't writing anything. But the only negative thing I saw in a Pittsburgh paper was a critical letter from one fan. New York writers weren't as nice, but they didn't really criticize his lineup. They criticized him for speaking out a lot and changing his stories, but that's completely different. So I suspect the reasons he stopped, he was getting feedback. He didn't like criticizing him, not so much from the press, at least not directly, but based on some other issues. Okay, I had asked him, did he ever do it in the minor leagues? He said no. He had actually had the idea in 1947 when he was, I'm not sure, a sixth-string catcher with the Dodgers. Certainly didn't play a whole lot. He mentioned it to Bert Schotten, and Schotten sort of grumbled at him, said, when you've got your own team, you can try it. And he said that made him want to be a manager. He didn't do it in the minor leagues, probably because he was a smart man, knew if he did, he might not get a major league job. So going on, Dale Long did not bat him up at the top against left-handed pitching, which made sense on his career. But interestingly, in 56, Long was better against left-handed pitchers than right-handed pitchers. The Sporting News article I referred to earlier had a little side piece on Casey Stengel's liking the idea that they might try it. I checked on that. He never did, but with that team, why would he want to change things? So my conclusions are that his ideas had sabermetric merit. I don't think he did much quantitative analysis on it. He had one of his players, I think it was Dick Hall, figure out how many more times a batter batting first or second would hit than hitting third or fourth. Not a really difficult calculation. And he got the idea on the first and second batters hitting in the ninth inning from Alan Roth. But the models show that the front-loaded lineup should score more than the conventional ones he used. Some academic studies support banging the pitcher seven. So I think he had very good intuition. Plus, he just liked to shake things up a lot. So didn't find much difference on it. He was an unusual manager, but not really that successful. He was replaced by Danny Murtaugh in August of 57. The team did better under Murtaugh. Some of those younger players we saw were the ones who won the World Series in 1960, so Murtaugh was able to get them to develop better, where the Bragan would have or not, we don't know. He went to the Indians and apparently was not liked very much there, so he's only there about half a season. His best record was with the Braves, 3.5 seasons. They were over 500, but they never finished above fifth place. So in the middle of 66, he was removed and the Braves started doing better. So whatever reasons. So that's basically what I have. If you go to my website, you'll find out more about the Markov model than you want. You can email me, and I'll be happy to respond and provide some details. And I'm going to eventually post the slides and notes on my website and also on the RetroSheet research page. That's probably a better place to find it because there's so much good stuff there. So, thank you. Yeah, go ahead. What do you mean by double switch rule? I mean, you could always put two players in and have them switch their batting position. Is that what you mean, or some? You could always do. Yeah, no, I don't think that's ever been something that couldn't be done. And as I recall, it often did get done just for the reason that you're going to bring. Well, to point out, in those days, there were far fewer relief pitchers, as Dave Smith was showing us earlier, so there'd be fewer needs for double switches. But I think they've always been in play and done when it made sense. Yeah?
Mark, regarding Bragan and Hank Aaron with the Braves, he never batted Aaron first in the lineup, but I recall very clearly that when he was with the Braves, he moved Aaron from fourth the third in the batting order, and his comment at the time was that he wanted to guarantee that his best hitter would bat in the first inning. So yeah. He was sort of going in the same direction, but he didn't quite have right. The nerve to move Aaron all the way to the top.
I found one time when Aaron was in the lineup bang second. So it was an idea he had, but I apparently just abandoned it after 56 for whatever reasons.
Great work. I have a question about, were Bragan's pitchers noticeably better or worse offensively than league average? And my second question is, did you look at the occurrence of sacrifice chances and what pitchers were doing predominantly in the first half of a game within that 15 or 16 game stretch that might have stood out?
Basically, those are nice ideas. I didn't do them, but we can see what their pitchers did for the year on the last line there. And I think that's sort of typical of what National League pitchers were doing in those days. I didn't look at the whole league then. Wouldn't be hard to do if on RetroSheet, I'm not online here. So, but I think that was pretty typical hitting. Yeah, probably if you wanted to do that. Yeah. Yeah, I don't think it would be an issue. If he really wanted to do it, he might have batted Aaron second and Matthews third, or maybe depending on the pitchers, Matthews second and Aaron third. So keep them back to back, but just move them up a bit. I mean, that's essentially what's happening today with guys like Trout and, well, the Yankees have so much power hitting Judge second. But they were doing that last year, even before they got Stanton. So, okay, great. So, there's a lot of good stuff still to happen.